30 to 40%. I mean, just think about that for a second. 30 to 40% of the Old Testament is made up of pure, sweeping narrative stories.
Yeah, it's a massive amount of text.
Right. We are talking about these huge foundational epics that have literally shaped civilizations. And yet, if you step into a modern religious setting today or, listen to a typical communicator tackle these texts, they avoid them like the plague.
Oh, absolutely. They run the other way.
Or worse, when they do try to teach them, they sound like beginners playing the saxophone.
That is such a painful visual, but it's so accurate.
It is. They might be hitting the right historical notes, sure, but there's just zero artistic rhythm, no breath control, and definitely no soul behind it.
Right, it's just that squeaky fourth grade band concert sound,
Right.
which is exactly how we treat nearly half of this ancient text.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this. Because today's mission for our deep dive is figuring out why this massive missed opportunity happens, and more importantly, how to fix it.
And we've got an incredible source for this today.
We really do. We are diving into session one of a lecture series called The Challenge of Preaching Old Testament Narratives. This is by Dr. Stephen D. Mathewson, and he brings this really rare blend to the table.
Yeah, he's not just an academic, though he does hold a PhD in Hebrew Bible from Stellenbosch University.
Right. He directs doctoral programs, but he's also been a pastor for 39 years. So
Yeah.
he's actually standing in front of real people week in and week out, trying to make these ancient texts resonate. I mean, he literally wrote the book on the art of preaching these narratives.
Which is so needed because, well, we all naturally gravitate towards stories, right?
100%.
If you sit in a coffee shop and just listen to the hum of conversation, people aren't exchanging, bulleted lists of abstract concepts.
No, they're complaining about their chaotic weekends or workplace drama.
Exactly. And even on cable news or sports, broadcasters are always hunting for the human interest angle.
So this isn't just a pastor problem.
Not at all. Whether you are a manager presenting to a board, or a marketer, or just someone trying to persuade a friend, if you ignore narrative, you're just fighting an uphill battle.
Right.
Mathewson actually brings in this great quote from the philosopher James K.A. Smith, who says, "Our hearts traffic in stories."
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, they disciple us. They plant ideas directly into our brains without us even realizing it. And he also mentions an observation from the late theologian R.C. Sproul.
What did Sproul say?
He pointed out that people will listen 10 times harder to a story than they will to an abstract lesson.
10 times harder. So communicators have this massive built-in advantage if they just use the material sitting right in front of them.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the obvious question. If humans are so deeply wired for stories, why on earth do we neglect them when we're trying to convey something important?
Right. It seems so counterintuitive.
It really does. And Dr. Mathewson identifies a few major hurdles here. I want to look at the first one, which we could call the fluff fallacy.
Ah, the idea that stories are just lightweight.
Exactly. We mistakenly view them as fluff.
Well, it touches on this deeply ingrained hierarchy we have about knowledge. Like, modern culture has basically decided that abstract, highly analytical logic is sophisticated and mature.
And narrative is just juvenile.
Right. Or just suited for ancient, less intellectually developed societies.
Which is so ironic when you look at modern religious settings, because down in the basement, in the Sunday school classes, the kids are getting the epic cinematic Bible
Yeah,
stories,
the good stuff.
David and Goliath, Daniel in the Lion's Den, Queen Esther. But then the big people upstairs, they get these incredibly complex, heavily analytical epistles, Romans, Ephesians.
Like graduating to spiritual adulthood means leaving the stories behind.
Exactly. It's so backwards.
Mathewson quotes Wesley Cord on this exact phenomenon. He explains that many adults actually disdain narrative discourse.
Wow, disdain.
Yeah. Mathewson saw this firsthand when he pastored in the suburbs of Chicago. His congregation was full of, like, chemical engineers and science PhDs working at major pharmaceutical companies.
So highly analytical people.
Very. And when they came to listen to a message, they wanted tight, logically argued facts. Give me a bullet point list. Give me a formula I can apply.
Because a bulleted list feels productive, right? It gives you this illusion that you're mastering the material. You walk away with an actionable item.
It does. But the prominent scholar, N.T. Wright, defends the narrative form here. He argues that treating stories as lesser is just a fundamentally flawed way to view human existence.
How so?
He says stories are actually one of the most basic modes of human life. They aren't just cute illustrations to warm up the audience before the real thing, the story, is the real thing.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second here. For the communicator who is standing up there every week, isn't it just practically easier to teach an epistle?
Oh, for sure.
Because to me, reading an epistle is kind of like reading a user manual. The rules are right there. Do this, don't do that.
Very straightforward.
Right. But a narrative is like watching a complex art house movie. You have to interpret the director's choices. You have to figure out why the camera lingered on that specific object in the background. It takes a massive amount of interpretive work.
That is a brilliant way to frame the tension. It absolutely requires more effort. But Eugene Peterson argued that dismissing stories just because they're harder to parse is born of ignorance.
Ignorance, that's a strong word.
It is. But Peterson insisted that the story is actually the most adult and the most serious form of language we possess.
Because a user manual can't hold all the messy human stuff.
Exactly. A sterile manual can't hold the contradictions and the raw realities of life. Only a narrative has the structural integrity to hold all of that tension without breaking.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because building on that idea that stories are this adult form of language, Matthewson explains exactly why they require such mature analysis.
Right, it's the subtlety.
The extreme subtlety. He compares Old Testament narratives to a dot-to-dot picture. They rely entirely on showing rather than telling.
And that indirectness drive modern, efficiency-obsessed readers completely crazy.
Oh, I bet.
Matthewson actually mentions his own mentor, the late Haddon Robinson, who articulated what I think every reader secretly feels at some point.
What's that?
He asked, why didn't God just come right out and say what he meant and not beat around the bush with stories?
Yes. Just give me the bottom line so I can get on with my day.
That is the modern impulse perfectly summed up. Yeah. And when you compare Old Testament narrative to the New Testament epistles, the contrast is super jarring.
Right.
Matthewson points out that even when the Apostle Paul writes a grueling, highly complex, 200-word, run-on sentence like in Ephesians 1.
Which is a nightmare to diagram.
Right. You might have to diagram it like a high school grammar project, but he is still putting all of his theological cards directly on the table. The information is explicitly stated.
Whereas narrative refuses to do that. It leaves white space.
So much white space.
It just introduces a character, describes an action, and then stops. And that subjectivity terrifies communicators. Because if you're on a stage, you feel like it's your job to provide absolute, airtight certainty.
White space feels like losing control.
Exactly. It's deeply intimidating to let the text speak for itself without over-explaining it. So communicators just bypass the narrative's actual meaning.
Yeah, they treat the Old Testament story as dry historical trivia, or just as a mere illustration to prop up a New Testament concept.
Like taking the sprawling story of David and just using it as a quick anecdote for something Paul said in Corinthians, it completely strips the story of its own theological weight.
Matthewson quotes David Duell here, who warns strongly against this. Duell argues that using Old Testament stories only to illustrate New Testament truths creates biblical imbalance.
Biblical imbalance.
Yeah. He reminds us of 2 Timothy 3.16, which says, all scripture is profitable for doctrine. That includes the messy narratives.
And you know, this tension is actually at the center of a major modern debate. Yep. For our listeners, we need to make it super clear right off the bat. We are not taking sides here. We are just reporting what's in our source material impartially. But Matthewson brings up Andy Stanley.
Right, a highly influential pastor.
Yes. Stanley suggested that modern Christians should consider unhitching their teaching from the Old Covenant. The argument being that to reach a skeptical, science-minded modern audience, communicators need to detach from the baggage of ancient narratives.
And on the other side, you have scholars like Brent Strawn,
who Matthewson strongly agrees with.
Right. They push back hard, arguing that you have to learn the language of both testaments together. You can't amputate the Old Testament without losing the entire framework.
But this brings up a huge question for me. How can an ancient text be both a recording of historical fact and a theological argument at the exact same time?
It's a great question. Usually we think of history as objective and theology as an argument.
Right. How do they overlap?
What's fascinating here is how Matthewson explains this dual nature. He uses a modern analogy with Abraham Lincoln.
Okay, I'm listening.
So think about two highly respected, meticulously researched books about Lincoln. One is Doris Kearns Goodwin's A Team of Rivals. The other is Lincoln's Sword.
Both grounded in absolute historical facts.
Yes. Let's call the total pool of verifiable facts about Lincoln's life points A through Z.
Like the dates of the Civil War, cabinet members, speech locations. the raw data.
Exactly. So Doris Kearns Goodwin dips into that massive pool of facts, but she deliberately selects facts B, C, and F.
Okay.
She strings those specific facts together to craft a narrative proving Lincoln was a master team builder.
A political genius managing rivals. Got it.
But the author of Lincoln's Sword dips into that exact same pool of facts and selects facts G and L. They string those together to prove Lincoln was primarily a master orator using his speeches as a weapon.
So neither author violates history.
Nope. They are both telling the factual truth, but they are both highly ideological. They're arranging facts to make a specific argument.
It all comes back to the director's choices. The facts a storyteller leaves on the cutting room floor are just as important as the ones they zoom in on. The camera angle is the argument.
Yes. And Mathewson points out, the Old Testament authors are doing the exact same thing. They are historians, but ideological historians.
Right.
In the Hebrew Bible, books like Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings aren't even categorized simply as history. They're called the former prophets.
Ah, because they're using the historical record to deliver a prophetic theological message.
Exactly.
So if a communicator fails to realize these stories are sophisticated arguments, and they're already intimidated by the Old Testament, maybe opting for Greek over Hebrew, they fall into what Mathewson sees as the ultimate trap.
Using the wrong tools to dissect the art.
They try to tame the text. They resort to what feels safe analytical dissection.
Mathewson quotes Don Wardlaw here, who says communicators feel they haven't done their job unless they've dissected the text into a lawyer's brief.
A lawyer's brief.
Yeah, taking this vibrant, breathing story and forcing it to be subservient to cold, technical reasoning.
I have to say, one of my absolute favorite parts of this source is how gleefully Dr. Mathewson roasts his own early failures at doing exactly this.
Oh, it's so funny.
He shares this outline from a sermon he preached early on 1 Samuel chapter 7. He took this incredibly dramatic narrative and just chopped it up into three lifeless points.
Let me guess.
Point one, the repentance of God's people. Point two, the victory of God's people. Point three, the prosperity of God's people.
The classic indestructible three-point sermon.
It gets worse. Under his first point, he felt this uncontrollable urge to have subpoints that all started with the letter D.
Oh, no.
The determination to seek the Lord, the decree to put away idols, and the decision to offer confession. Determination, decree, decision.
It is beautifully parallel, heavily alliterated, and it completely destroys the emotional flow of the narrative.
It totally suffocates it. And then he brings up another pastor's outline that used these incredibly obscure V words.
Right, the V words.
The vilification of God's glory, the vindication of God's glory, and the vengeance by God's glory.
Wow.
I mean, come on. When was the last time you used the word vilification while hanging out with friends watching Netflix? Nobody actually talks like that in real life.
No one.
Why are communicators so obsessed with forcing these neat little alphabetical lists onto an audience?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it happens because they are trapped in a very specific old school recipe for public speaking.
A recipe.
Yeah. Pastors are taught a specific structural recipe, especially for teaching those dense epistles. You slice the text into an analytical outline, season the points with parallelism, sprinkle heavily with alliteration, and project it on a big screen.
It feels safe and professional.
It does. But Mathewson argues good storytellers never convey stories through analytical outlines. You don't pause a movie halfway through to flash three D words on the screen to explain the plot.
It would completely break the spell.
Thanks.
So, if treating the story like a lawyer's brief kills the magic, how do we actually communicate it effectively? We know we can't just read it flatly in a monotone voice, but we can't chop it into a sterile outline either.
Right.
How do we relearn this art?
Mathewson breaks it down into a two-part strategy. He separates the study process from the presentation process.
Okay.
Part one is hermeneutical or exegetical. That's the study phase. Part two is homiletical, the presentation phase.
So exegesis is like being the detective in the kitchen, figuring out how the meal was cooked.
Analyzing the ingredients, finding those B, C, and F facts, and figuring out why the author chose them.
Right. And homiletics is being the waiter gracefully presenting the beautiful plate in the dining room.
Exactly. But mastering both without looking robotic takes serious practice.
Mm.
Mathewson uses this incredible driver's ed analogy.
Oh, I love this part.
Yeah, when he was a teenager learning to drive, he opened the manual and found that making a simple left-hand turn was broken down into 10 to 12 mechanical steps.
Like, check the mirror, engage the blinker, check the blind spot, hit the brake, hand-over-hand steering.
Right. And sitting in the driver's seat, overthinking every micro movement, it feels incredibly stupid and clunky. Who thinks in 12 steps just to turn a car?
Anyone learning a new skill knows that paralysis.
But the genius of the mechanical breakdown is that it forces you to learn the fundamentals. At first, it's stilted. But eventually, with practice, those discrete steps fuse into a single fluid motion.
You don't think about the 12 steps, you just drive.
Learning to communicate narrative works the exact same way. You have to learn the rigorous mechanics during your study time so you can present it organically to the audience.
Which leads directly to his philosophy on outlines. I think this is a total game changer for anyone presenting information. Mathewson says an analytical outline is exactly like a human skeleton.
Yes, the skeleton is absolutely necessary. He needs his own skeleton to sit up straight in his chair. Without it, he'd be a puddle on the floor.
Right.
But, and this is the crucial distinction, the audience shouldn't be able to see the skeleton.
It has to remain invisible beneath the flesh and the emotion of the story.
The structure must be there, supporting the argument, keeping it from collapsing. But you don't project the bare bones onto the screen for the audience to stare at.
You give them the fully fleshed out, breathing story. It's such a powerful visual.
It really is. And just as a quick note of reassurance for anyone intimidated by the ancient languages here, Mathewson is very clear that you do not need to know Biblical Hebrew to find this invisible skeleton.
Good, because that sounds daunting.
Right. There are exceptional English translations and study tools today, but he does add this wonderful piece of irony. Narrative is actually the easiest form of Biblical Hebrew to read.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Books like Jonah are often the very first things language students translate because the storytelling structure is just so universally clear and robust.
That is fascinating. So what does this all mean? If we zoom out and look at the entire journey Dr. Mathewson has taken us on, we arrive at this really profound shift in perspective.
We do.
These ancient Old Testament stories are not just fluff meant to keep kids entertained in basement classrooms. They are incredibly sophisticated, subtle arguments, expertly disguised as historical accounts.
They use the director's camera angles to make deep theological points.
Exactly. And if we try to dissect them like a legal document or force them into a cute alliterated list, we kill the magic. We lose the meaning entirely.
But if we're willing to learn their internal mechanics.
Right, to build that invisible skeleton in our study time, then we can present them fluidly and tap into the profound, unparalleled power that stories have over the human heart.
It completely changes how you read the text. But more importantly, it changes how you view all the communication happening around you.
Absolutely.
I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder as you go about the rest of your day. Something that builds on Mathewson's point about history and ideology.
Okay, what is it?
Think about the media you consumed this past week. Maybe it was a favorite television show, a true crime podcast, or just the evening news. I want you to ask yourself, What was the invisible skeleton holding that story together?
Oh, wow.
What specific facts did the storyteller selectively pick out of the total timeline to subtly shape your ideology without you even noticing?
Because once you learn to look for the director's choices, you start seeing the skeleton beneath the flesh. You never consume a story the same way again.
You really start seeing the matrix of storytelling everywhere you look.
That is a brilliant thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep looking for the deeper patterns in the stories around you. We'll catch you next time.